Marie Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember. Even with a busy speaking and radio schedule, she finds time to devote to her creative love of dance. Don Johnson is an author, speaker, and major motion picture film producer. Both hold master's degrees in theology, and together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview.
Catholic worldview.
From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio,
you're listening to
Trending with Donna Timmery.
We always like to get listener email, and I wanted to start the show with a lovely email from a nice lady who says, what a wonderful show you had today. You shared some vital information about respecting husbands, and thank you so much, Donna Timmery. Basically, I'll summarize a little bit of this. You're helping to heal marriages. However, she says, how about a show on how to deal with extra difficult spouses, like those who are passive aggressive and perhaps narcissistic and those kind of things? And we do get this request more often than not, actually.
Yeah, we actually get requests like this quite often. And, you know, I think that marriage and relationships are one of the toughest topics. I think dealing with other personalities besides our own is just a difficult issue in general. So whether you're married or not, this is something that I think is very prominent and important to discuss. And so, you know, I laughed. I read the question, what about difficult spouses who are, I think it was something like narcissistic, maybe introverted,
passive aggressive.
You know, and I think that this is an important question to ask before we get started. You are talking about yourself, right?
That's
and this is the tough part, because it is so easy immediately to point out the faults in the person that we are dating or we're married to, or even just the people we work with, right? I mean, complaining and being frustrated over the environment we're in is so easy. And I think that that's where we have to start with recognizing there's that element there where it's so easy to point the finger.
I'm glad we're on exactly the same page on this, Timmer, because I always shy away from this kind of question because it is so easy to start focusing on what other people need to do to change.
Yes.
And actually, if you heard last week's show about the marriage, what we did actually was focus on what you needed to do to change. That was actually what the whole show was about. It wasn't about changing your spouse. It's about what can you do differently to make your spouse's life better. And that has to be the starting point when you're talking about any relationships, whether you're right, whether it's your spouse or your dating partner or your coworker. The starting point has to be you. And this is just very biblical to start with. I mean, this was Jesus's big thing. Before you start taking that plank out of the other person's eye, or that speck, actually, you better take the plank out of your own eye first.
The log. The way.
And do not, it's so easy to judge. And I think this is where the do not judge thing comes in. It's so, so easy to be judgmental. I mean, it's just, I feel like here I am judging people. I feel like in the last week, things happen in life where people just have a lot of like opinions about what you should do. Okay, let's just leave it at that. Okay. A lot of opinions about, hey, you know what? This is what you need to do. And
let me tell you how to run your life, because I've got a fantastic idea.
Yeah, I've got this fantastic idea about what you should do. Fair enough. You know, let's all take, you know, wisdom and insight from others. But a lot of it is very judgmental.
I mean,
I was just like almost blown away this week by how judgy people are. And listen, again, you got to start with you. You got to take a look in the mirror and say, am I perfect? And if you're not, if you are, great, I'd like to meet you. If you're not, the rest of us, that's where any of these conversations have to start.
Right. Well, and I think part of the issue is that each of us spend such a long period of time focusing on the fact that we are not okay until that person is okay. And we end up basing our emotional stability, physical stability, psychological stability, based on whether or not that person is okay. Not even necessarily okay, but how we ourselves want them to be. And until they are, we aren't almost comfortable in our own skin or with our own lives. And that's a big issue, because the vast majority of people are not going to be okay up to your standards, or maybe not even okay at all. Maybe there's something that has taken place in their life that will never maybe lead them to emotional maturity unless they really do seek help. You know, and I think that that's what's important. And in recognizing I can be okay no matter what this person does, I that's hard to say within a marriage. I recognize that.
Yeah, that's, yeah. So the I agree with you too. I'm like, yes, we need to start with our own deal. And I was tempted to say, here's what I was tempted to say. I'll just say it, but take it with a grain of salt. The extent to which your life is thrown off kilter by what other people do is sort of on you, right? Like, that's, you know, if you are completely, if your day is completely askew all day, every day because of other people, that actually shows some sort of issue with you. Now, here's the reason I was hesitant to say that. I don't want to downplay the legitimate hurts that people give you. I mean, I know, of course, especially
that a
spouse.
It takes place on a daily basis.
We get hurt all the time.
Right.
But there is an aspect of this where you have to be able to work on yourself. And what I mean by that is allow the grace of God to work in you. We're not helping ourselves here.
Right.
It's about allowing God to mature you, taking the steps that he wants you to take to become the kind of person he wants you to be, so that those other people don't destroy you with what they do. Because people are just going to do rotten things. Now, again, that's not to say that spouses, boyfriends, girlfriends, friends, coworkers, they do bad stuff. Of course they do. But if our lives are dependent on them becoming perfect, it's a losing game. That's never going to happen.
It's never going to happen. And I think that that's what's so important. So say you are in a really challenging marriage relationship. If you're in a challenging relationship that is not a marital relationship, and you're asking these questions, as hard as it may be, maybe that means that this is not the right person for you to marry. That being said, if you are in a marriage, you have made a covenant before God, you know, through thick and end to the end, that you have sworn an oath to God that is so much more than an oath, a covenant, an exchanging of blood, an exchange of the body, to say, I will love this person no matter what. And I think that there is, in that moment, a beautiful reminder that you have been tasked with a great responsibility. And, you know, I think of St. John Paul the Great's work of love and responsibility. You have that responsibility no matter what. Whether or not the other person fully takes the reins of responsibility, you cannot change. You can't make someone become someone else. You can't make someone do anything you want. Really, the only thing you can make someone do, and I was actually thinking about this a lot after the last show where we talked about respect, the only thing we can really make someone do is we can make them feel guilty or just make them feel like crap. Because I could say anything to someone, and if I'm not maybe speaking the language that makes them feel complimented, they're never going to be happy based on a compliment necessarily, but I can very easily make someone feel lousy.
Yeah, that is a great point. I like the way you put that. It's unfortunately true, I think, that the power you hold over others is largely the power to hurt. We can uplift,
right?
But let's say you try to do something uplifting and the person doesn't respond. You know, that seems to be more likely than if I try to hurt you, are they going to be hurt? Yeah, probably.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that that's where, you know, again, you look at love and responsibility. There's this responsibility for the other person where the other person, in a sense, comes before yourself. But when we say that, though, that requires that you have built yourself up so that the judgment that maybe you're passing on the other person, I think often is a judgment we start with passing on ourselves, and then we project our faults onto the other person or ignore our own. And so I think that Catholic lifestyle of constantly working on the things that we struggle with is so important. That accountability of the confessional, the accountability of friendships, the accountability of saying, I have to work this out on my own and not just leave it in the hands of others to deal with the mess of who I am sometimes, which we all are.
Well, we all are. That's right. My wife and I were talking about this a little bit, and she has a phrase that I'm sure is quite common, but she says, hurt produces hurt, right? Like, people who are out there trying to hurt people have been hurt themselves most likely, almost always, right? And having that perspective, two ways. One, that person who is doing that stuff for you, that probably is coming from a lot of hurt. And maybe you could try to figure out and help them deal with the hurt rather than try to inflict more pain, because that's sort of the impulse, right? Is that you hurt me, I'm going to hurt you back. But also looking at ourselves and saying, the desire that I have now to hit back at you and to hurt you, where's that coming from? Yes, it could be the hurt that you've inflicted on me, but maybe some other stuff, maybe some other issues that I haven't quite dealt with yet. And so I guess sort of what we're saying, bottom line here, is you need to work a lot on taking the beam out of your own eye. Take care of yourself. And here's the thing, though, Timur. You know what? Relationships, even with people who don't like you and hurt, relationships are always a lot easier when your relationship with God is stronger.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, that seems to be an unbreakable principle in my life, is that when everything's falling apart and I'm feeling, you know, like, oh, I want back at that person and that person, my relationship with God is probably not what it should be. If I can't forgive, for example, I mean, this is another straight biblical principle. This is Jesus. If you can't forgive, you're not realizing what Jesus has done for you.
Well, and I think that this is a good point. You know, the question to begin with, how do I deal with this type of spouse? You know, the woman wrote in talking about, you know, her passive aggressive, narcissistic spouse. And I get it. I hear what you're saying. But sometimes when we dwell on those things, even if we're choosing to dwell on them and it's repetitive behavior, that changes how we view the other person. And, you know, a gift is when we're able to be grateful. Like, this person just did X right now. They really upset me. They're hurting me in this moment. But we can choose in that moment to think of a good thought. Remember when this person did this. Or remember every day this person, whatever it might be, you know, think about the good. And an exercise that I personally have been working on lately has been at the end of the day, picking up my rosary. And hopefully you've prayed your rosary first, because praying the rosary is so important for marriages, especially for addictions, for growth in the faith. But taking the rosary, instead of praying the rosary, start on the cross. Say something you're thankful for. And it might be a person. And not just, I'm thankful for this person, but I'm thankful for their smile. I'm thankful for them having done this. Like, keep saying what you're thankful for. And that attitude of gratitude truly does change the way you view your life and the other people around you.
Timmery and Dawn will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Dawn Johnson Media. This is Trending with Dawn and Timmery on Relevant Radio. To learn more about Dawn Johnson or Timmery Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit dawnjohnsonministries.org or timmery.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.
We've been talking about how to deal with those in your life that are perhaps narcissistic and passive aggressive and those kind of things. And before we leave the topic, I don't want it to seem like we've gone around it. So I'm not a trained psychologist or a relational counselor. Timmery probably has more experience in that than I do. When I want insight on these things, I go talk to my wife, who does have training in this stuff. And what we have said is more pastoral, like, first of all, take care of yourself. Now, that's not to say there aren't techniques for dealing with people with particular personality issues. I'm not saying that. So, like, passive-aggressive people in my life, I'm a guy who likes to, as you might expect, deal with things directly. There's not a lot of topics that I'm like, oh, no, we can't talk about that, you know, or I'm going to go around, beat around the bush or something. I'm just going to, like, directly, all right, here's the issue, let's talk about it.
Yeah.
Passive aggressive people generally don't like to do that, as I understand it, and those kind of people in my life. And so rather than letting it go, and I don't know, I try to at some point bring the issue up and just bring it out into the open and say, it feels like to me, use the I language, right?
Right.
I sense it feels like to me that you were trying to send me a message there, and correct me if I'm wrong, but this is what I heard, you know, like, do that sort of thing. Is that correct? Did I get that wrong? Because what the passive aggressive person does is just sort of leave hints and little, you know, here's one of my favorites is, as a parent with children, the passive aggressive people are trying to send you a message. They'll tell it to your kid.
That is great.
Oh,
that is great.
Does daddy not have a real job? Love that, folks. Talk to the kid. Anyway, that sort of thing.
But you know what? That brings up a really good point. Maybe you are struggling with someone who's passive aggressive. And on a practical note, you know, we've all dealt with these people. Maybe just say, I'm having a hard time understanding what you're saying. Can you please just tell me what is upsetting you or what your concern is? Because maybe they grew up in an environment where if they were to confront things head on, that wasn't taken very well. So you're actually helping to empower them to communicate better. And you're sometimes helping to break a habit. So that takes over and over and over again.
Yeah, there are situations, family dynamics, where things just don't get spoken about openly. And rather than speak about them openly, things just sort of fester and simmer. And every so often, it just blows up. And you have this huge fight, and then everybody settles down, and you get, but everybody knows it's antagonistic, and you got to try to just jump in and say, I can't live in this situation like this. If there's an issue, let's address it. I understand. I totally understand the unwillingness to say, if I confront this person, this is going to be a blow up, and then they're not going to speak to me for the next month, and then what's going to happen? But at the same time, I don't think you can just let that fester and fester.
Well, and I think sometimes passive aggressive people do not actually know what they are upset about. It's become such a continued mode of behavior that when you actually end up asking them, they have to think about what is actually bothering them. And in some cases, there might not be something bothering them, or it's something very simple. And you're helping, again, to break a mold of behavior that's been taking place. So I'm just going to throw this out there, CatholicTherapist.com. Maybe your marriage is struggling. It's not something that Don and I can directly help you with. It's something that we, of course, I know on a daily basis are praying for you guys and holy marriages. And you are the reason why we are doing this show. However, we can only do so much, and our Lord can only do so much if we're not willing to take steps as well. And so CatholicTherapist.com, finding a good Catholic therapist. Maybe you just try two or three sessions. Maybe your insurance works with you. It's worth trying, and I really would recommend this.
Before we leave this topic, something you said, where people are upset, maybe they haven't spoken to somebody for 20 years, and when you ask them, well, what was that all about? Something so small, or you can't even remember. If you've got those situations in your life, maybe, you know, just bring that up. Like, what was it we were fighting about? And hopefully, you know, I've known people who literally, I haven't spoken to that person for 10 years. Why? Oh, I don't know. He bent my baseball card or something. You know, it's just something stupid.
Right. Anyway. Beautiful testament to marriage. I also received another email just a couple weeks ago from a woman who lived in Key West off the coast of Florida and was in the midst of the hurricane. And she has a number of children. Her and her husband lost their home in the hurricane. They're currently rebuilding. They've been totally uprooted, I think, to Tennessee. And she was writing me, not even focusing on what happened. You know, I am shocked thinking, oh my gosh, I haven't heard from you in a little while. And here is this message. And she said, I recently discovered the rosary. And she's just talking about how she's felt this call to pull away from social media. And she has, but at the same time, she's felt called to share her journey of 365 days a year, you know, praying the rosary and these meditations. So it's something she started on Instagram, but it was such a testament. She's not focused on what they've lost. Mm. She's focused on the gratitude she has in her faith and growing in it.
All right. As a father of three girls, two of which are teenagers, this article struck a chord with me. The headline is, Teaching Our Girls That Beautiful Doesn't Mean Sexy.
I can feel you getting tense just bringing up this topic.
I'm at a constant state of tension, I'll be honest, with the culture because of the overt hypersexualization, not just of women, but of young girls.
Yeah.
And it's pervasive. You can't buy clothes. You can't, you know, open up your phone. You can't get a magazine. You can't listen to music. It seems like it's just hard not to have your kids faced with this message of, hey, what you need to be is sexy.
Right.
That's your goal.
It's a frustrating issue that I think many parents are struggling through today, because you have multiple parts of the culture. You know, this woman talks about how it used to be, you know, she's changed her shopping habits with her child. A few years ago, it was shopping at Justice and picking up somewhat modest, and I think that's important to recognize, she had somewhat modest but cute clothing for my daughter. Now she had her daughter will only ever shop at Abercrombie, Hollister, Aeropostale, and she wants all of the undergarments from Pink, Victoria's Secret. And, you know, I think part of that is this desire for a brand, this desire to fit in, to have what other people have. But at the same time, the issue is that a lot of these same exact companies are making a small that is an extra, extra, extra small. You know, that I remember in high school, like, Don, I was dancing. I was really fit in high school. And I remember there was this frustration. If you couldn't fit into a zero, well, you know, what is a small size? Because I'm petite. Yeah. I'm a healthy. You know, there's this moment that's frustrating, or recognizing that other people have curves in their body and can't wear certain things that other people are wearing. And so I get this woman's frustration. And so I think that there's a practical side to it. And then there's also, you know, a mentoring spiritual side to it. On the practical side, we get it. Like, Don's going through this. It's not easy to find clothes.
Here's the philosophy we have chosen to try to implement as parents. It's not like we have made the girls wear the ankle-length dresses, you know, and the frilly collars and all that stuff. It's not, you know, my oldest daughter was always so appalled that she would be looked at as the classic homeschooler.
Me
and
too.
I blame movies for this, by the way, the media. But anyway, we're like, yeah, well, no, okay, I get it. I mean, we don't look like that, you know, like we're trying to buy stylish clothes, but you're not going to walk out of the house with just everything hanging out. So you got to layer. I mean, that's basically for girls. Okay, you can wear that, but only if you've got something underneath, like the camisoles.
Are you talking about the half tank tops of today?
Oh my goodness, like, crazy. Crazy.
But you know, as my mom has pointed out to me, because my sister has a lot of those shorter tank tops, my mom goes, you have to recognize the style today is to have the higher pants, so it should be covering stomach.
At least we've gone back to the higher pants. That's true, like the 80s mom pants almost. For a while there, it was like the lower pants, right? It was like halfway down your bottom.
Right. Yeah, I call them the butt cheek shorts. Yeah. They're the butt cheek shorts. You know what's funny is I actually do have an aversion. So I hate saying this, a huge aversion. I don't even like saying it. I was homeschooled, and I hate mentioning I'm homeschooled. And the worst thing ever when I do interviews, and maybe it's like a really traditional group, they're like, so I want to talk about your upbringing being homeschooled. I'm like, oh, always the stigma. Like, yeah, I love my mother. I have a great education. But there was always this embarrassed moment of you don't want to look like a homeschooler. You don't want to be with the homeschoolers. But on a practical note regarding clothing, you know, living in Southern California, fitting in but also dressing nice and appropriately is a challenge. Here's one of my first recommendations. Don't just shop in the teenager, you know, youth, junior section. Shop in the adult section as well. This is something that helped a lot when my mom really pushed me to shop, in my mind, what was the old lady clothing section. But it really isn't, right? And that was helpful. You have more options. Also, be willing to buy things online and be willing to return them. It really isn't that difficult to take the label, print it out, and send it right back. So here are some resources that actually have decently, I think, modest clothes, more modest, but not, I don't want to say modest in the sense that like you're covering everything, but really nice clothing. You have ashandrose.com, modli.com. And also, I really do like, and I hate giving out like ideas for where I like to shop sometimes, but Mod Cloth is great because on the dresses, it actually will say where people rank them in terms of length. So I've had like last minute dress crises where I've needed something and I hate shopping because of this issue. I think I have another aversion to shopping. And so what I do is I'm like, I'm buying three dresses, returning some of them based on the length that the website says. I will determine which dress I keep. And I've had some really good experiences.
Yeah, that's a great point. Returning is very easy. And ultimately, we may have to talk about this a little bit after the break. Ultimately, I think that parents actually do a little bit more harm than good in wanting their kids to be acceptable in certain parts of society. Is it clothes? Maybe not for you. But what pressures are you exerting on your kids? What do you think your kids should be to be acceptable in society? And ask yourselves those questions. I think actually parents mess up here a little bit more than they think in some of these areas.
Timmery and Don will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Don Johnson Media. From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio, you're listening to Trending. Trending. With Don and Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Here's a question for the men. What is the smallest size in, say, a men's pants that you can buy? Do you even know?
I have no idea.
Because you're not stuck with that like stigma, that mindset that zero, but in fact double zero is the smallest size. One of the Facebook Live listeners just commented, there's a size zero.
Which makes no sense at all, right? I mean, size zero means there's nothing there. I mean, obviously we need a positive number if we're going to size something. Then you don't exist. So yeah, men's clothing, there's medium, there's large. Is there small? I don't know. I'm not.
The waist size.
Yeah,
the inseam,
jean size. Right? Oh, yeah, I don't know.
That would make life so much better if we were then to actually do women's clothes that way. Men actually have more customization allowed for their clothing because of that.
Yeah.
Even the collar size.
Sure, you measure your collar.
We don't have options like that.
Really?
Unless it's undergarments, no. See where the priorities are.
So again, before we're leaving this subject, we talk a lot about the pressure on kids to fit in. And they feel immense social pressure, right? I don't want to be looked at as the geeky homeschooler. I want to wear fashionable clothes, this sort of thing. Now, I just want to throw that out there. And maybe it's only an Orange County thing. But I know in Orange County, a lot of the girls walk around in clothes that their parents actually picked for them so that they will fit in. And so I would say just be careful of that. Like, are you out there dressing your kids in clothes just so they'll be accepted by somebody else? Because here's the bottom line. This is what this article was getting at. You don't want to instill in your kids the view that beauty is something completely objective. It's something to do with your clothes or your makeup, right, or all of those things. I'm not discounting objective beauty in clothes and makeup. I think you can do them well and wear. I'm not discounting that. But ultimately, you have to be a beautifully virtuous person. That's got to be your top priority. No matter what your kids wear, no matter what sports teams they're on, no matter what grades they get, if they are increasing in virtue, you're a success as a parent.
Right.
Okay, so that's the bottom line in any of these, talking about kids. How are your kids doing as far as becoming more and more like Jesus? And if they're doing fine, good. If they're getting good grades, but they're absolutely just nasty, mean little people, then something's got to change, right?
Right.
And we all struggle with it as parents, throwing that out there.
I think this is a great point because I can tell you there have been things that I have worn that I know I drove my mom insane. Those patterns, all the patterns together and all the things in my hair. And like, I know to her, it just didn't make sense and it would be really frustrating to her. But I learned how to dress better with time. At least I think I have, right? I mean, who knows?
You could be the judge. Speaking of being judgy, we see you out there. What is Dawn wearing? What is going on there?
But you know what? Like, not putting pressure in terms of the body on your kids, like expecting high levels of like cleanliness, right? And respect of the body are important. Feeding them healthy foods. But yeah. Here's something I think that you can teach your kids. Dress appropriately for the right occasions. If you're going to the beach, you wouldn't be wearing what you're going to the beach in to church. I'd hope not. And I think that people begin to go, oh yeah, I wouldn't. That's not really right. Like, teach your kids to dress appropriately to the occasion and maybe even up for the occasion. So if they're hanging out with their friends, let them have fun wearing whatever they want, even if they look like a goofball, as long as it's appropriate, right? Like, I think that that's where, allow them to kind of develop themselves, but allow them to have respect and honor for where they are and who they're with.
I got the best piece of advice from a speaker years and years ago, and my kids were still very small, and here was his advice. He said this, kids are crazy, and it's okay. Okay, he's like, your kids are not going to fit the mold that you want. You know, they're going to say things you don't want them to say. They're going to have personalities that don't exactly fit. They may want to wear clothes you don't, as long as they're not completely immodest. It's all right. They're right. Crazy. Let them be crazy.
Right.
And I've tried to hold on to that when you think, oh my goodness, what's going on? That's all right. They're kids. They're crazy. You turned out all right, Timmy. It'll be all right.
Why, thank you. Another neat thing that we didn't get to talk about that I saw recently, this is an old story from Christmas time, but there was a disabled woman in Canada who had been disabled from the time that she was 15 years old. Now, 21 years later, woman who's been disabled, not really able to communicate with her family, but would recognize them and make noises when they'd come in the room. For the first time on Christmas, communicated with her mom when her mom commented, I love your Christmas outfit, essentially. Using a form of technology and symbol, she was able to point to and identify not that she was wearing, some t-shirt or something, but more appropriately with what she was wearing. And so it was a neat opportunity, I think, for the world to turn their eyes just for a moment to this family. This young woman, 15 years old, who became disabled and in the eyes of many people whose life would be snuffed out in Canada and across the United States in most cases now. And I mean, Netherlands, all over the world where we're passing physician-assisted suicide, we're euthanizing people. This is where we recognize each life has an element of worth to it. It's a life to be fought after, to be sought, and that no matter where they're at, maybe they're in a state where they can't communicate a lot, whatever it might be, having that value for another human person is so fundamental.
Yeah, that's the Catholic moral ethic, right? Is that everyone is created in the image of God, has dignity, and it doesn't matter your quality of life, you still have the same dignity. You are right. Still worthy of respect. And I love this story because The euthanasia movement really takes that quality of life thing to its, you know, dangerous ends, where they're saying, oh, well, these people, what kind of quality of life do they have? She's just laying there. But if you have listened to the stories over the years, not in the sort of main media, but personal stories of people who have been in comas or they have been, you know, severely disabled, they're like, no, they can tell that they're communicating. And the doctors and everyone's like, no, you know, they're really in a vegetative state. This technology that they've given this young lady now, well, she's 37 now, she's been in bed since she was 15 after the accident. They use a camera on her eyes. So they follow her eyes around with the camera, and whatever she looks at, that is how she basically signals. So instead of like pointing with her hands, she looks at it and they can see exactly what she's looking at. And she's communicating very clearly using icons now. And what an amazing thing. And so on one hand, it should reinvigorate all of us pro-lifers, I think, who are like, yes, that's exactly what we've been saying. Like, these people are still alive. They are. Can you imagine? I try to put myself in other people's shoes in this situation. Can you imagine? She's obviously there. She obviously is aware of what's happening.
Absolutely.
Being trapped and unable to communicate. Can you imagine some of the discussions they might be having? You know, well, should we pull the plug? I mean, I'm not saying that's happening.
She's alive,
right?
Inside.
And they're talking about, I'm not saying in this particular case, but we know of other cases where they've withheld the feeding. They've withheld the life support, whatever. And it's so tragic. So it's a great story.
And imagine you yourself. Imagine that you couldn't communicate with the people around you. But you're alive. And your family's loving you. They're with you on Christmas. They're spending time. Like, I know that they can't necessarily be there all the time. But they see value in you. Look at the sacrifice on the part of your family members and the sacrifice on your own part. And I can't imagine what sacrifice that may be. But this is what part of the Christian life is that Christ on the cross suffered for us, and we have the opportunity to grow closer to him and be with him in heaven. And there is an element of heaven on earth that we are stepping into along our journey when we unite our suffering, whether it's a difficult spouse, whether we're stuck in our own body, no matter what it might be and where you are, that suffering has tremendous meaning.
Let's stay in Canada for the next story very quickly here. You may have heard that Chip and Joanna Gaines of HGTV's Fixer Upper, not a show I watch. Is this a show you watch?
I don't really watch TV. I don't have cable television.
But a very popular show, very popular people. They announced that they are having baby number 5. And as you might expect, this brought a little bit of pushback from some of those in social media. How dare you have 5 children? What are you trying to kill us all? You're destroying the planet. And this article from CBC, which is the government-run news company in Canada, if you're not familiar with it, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, published an opinion piece saying that, you know what? It shouldn't be taboo to criticize parents for having too many kids. After all, these parents are filling up an overly crowded planet and taking resources from the rest of us. And I was reading this to Marie, and I thought, for one, she actually says this without any irony, that I'm not for telling women what to do with their bodies. except for what you're doing right now, telling them not to have any more kids. But then she basically recycles arguments from 1967 about how the planet is overcrowded and, oh, women are being oppressed and we're forced to stay at home. And I'm just thinking, have you not been a part of the culture at all for the last 40 years because every one of your points is so false.
And it has no factual information backing it up. The entire piece.
None of this.
It's a total passive aggressive smear on this poor couple. And, you know, we talked about being passive aggressive at the beginning of the show. I read this and just the title, quote, "It shouldn't be taboo to criticize parents for having too many kids." You want to know one of her big comments in the midst of this? She talks about shame, essentially, and how using shame to basically change attitudes and different things, and basically encourages shaming this poor couple who's in the public eye and who, quite frankly, it's none of our business how many children they have. Congratulations. They're celebrating their fifth child on social media. Lay off. It's none of your business.
Yeah, and the crazy thing is, it's not taboo. It's the accepted thing to criticize people who have... I only have four kids. You know what it's like to walk around with four kids in this culture? Everybody looks at you like you're crazy. Literally. We live in basically a post-apocalyptic wasteland where anybody with more than one kid, even two, okay, right. Two, okay, two. Right. If you start having even three kids, you're looked at askance in this culture. And so the picture she paints, I believe, is completely false. It's like looking at a snowstorm and saying, oh, this heat, we just need some more snow. And you're just so confused about what's going on here.
Timmery and Don will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Don Johnson Media. From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio, you're listening to Trending. Trending. With Don and Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Chip and Joanna Gaines announced recently that they are having their fifth child, and this raised some hackles around the various corners of social media, as you might expect. And CBC News even saw fit to publish an opinion piece about how we should actually pile on. That those of you who aren't criticizing Chip and Joanna, you should be, because it shouldn't be taboo. And we just want to briefly speak a little bit more about this, because my main point in this was, anybody who thinks that it's taboo to question large families is not living in the real world. It's exactly the opposite. The accepted cultural position of the moment is either don't have kids or have very few kids. That's the pressure. If you're growing up, especially as a woman in this culture, the message you're receiving is, listen, you can't have kids. You especially can't have kids before you're like 35 or 40 after you've got the mm-hmm. career and the money and all that stuff. That's the message. The message is not have a big family, enjoy your life. And so this is a piece of propaganda, ultimately, from CBC, painting the culture as it was, I don't know, probably never, but maybe 50, 70 years ago, maybe in the mid-50s, there was a little bit of pressure to say, hey, you're going to be happy as a homemaker. I get it. That's not the case now. And so what we actually need now is more kids and larger families, or this culture is going to self-destruct. I mean, it is already. Right. That's actually what we need. So those of you who are piling on families with big kids, you better look at those families and say, thanks, you're keeping us alive in this culture. Well, without you, we're done.
And it's not the Catholic way to look at having children and to have this attitude that, well, I'm only having two children, or I'm only having three. You know, we're not being open to life. If you are entering into marriage, we are called to be unitive and procreative. The unitive part for the good of the spouses, the union, the good, the growth of the individuals on their journey to be with God. Your job is to get your spouse to heaven. And the procreative element is that we are open to having children, that we're not using any artificial means or any barrier method preventing us from having children, right? You know, abstaining during periods of fertility for due reason, you know, and you are accountable before God for that, right? Abstaining is one thing, but this attitude and the fact that this woman in this piece, like, I can't believe she focuses on shame. She said, shame is a powerful tool for changing behavior. It's how we introduce new and existing social conversions. And then she goes on to say, it's unfortunate that Chip and Joanna bore that brunt of changing attitude, but let's learn from the reaction and examine our own actions. So she's basically saying, it's a shame that they had to be
shamed, but let's learn from our actions.
Sorry, and we should not sorry.
We should shame more people.
Yeah, right. She says, basically, yeah, shame is used in the culture, and you know, I kind of get that. Like, ultimately, cultures have a set of morals that they accept, and those who don't operate according to that do get shamed. And right now, the people who are getting shamed in the culture are the large families. Just try and walk around with a large family. You're going to get shamed in the culture. Don't you know how that happens? You know, the stupid questions you get all the time. And I don't even have a big family, so...
Or the question is, when people would criticize, because I know my mom said this, and I know a lot of other people would, but when they'd criticize you for having so many children, the question is, okay, which one would you like me to get rid of? Which one? You tell me which one we can eliminate, because you are pro-eugenics, essentially, for criticizing people for not having families. And that's where I think this woman who wrote the piece recognizes, yes, we've got forms of eugenics, and we've been associated with bad forms of population control, but really, I mean, do we need to continue to force people to believe that they have to have children?
Who is doing that? That's what I don't get. Who is telling you you have to have kids? Hey, before we leave that, you made a great point about the unitive and the procreative aspect of relationships and marriage, and how the goal is to get the spouse to heaven. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to add, one of the main means that God uses to make us holy is children. So those things go together, right? Like, you personally, yes, should be trying to help your spouse, but ultimately, the really great things in your life that help you become holy, hopefully, are your kids. I mean, they really help you to love. It's a whole different level of love. I've got a whole section in my new movie about the role that kids play in developing. I've got some great stories. Damon Owens tells a great one. Speaking, actually, two things with that while I'm thinking about it. So one, Damon Owens, to be the executive director of the Theology of the Body Institute, right, now runs a ministry called Joy to Be. Damon's going to be out here in L.A. this weekend at the One Life L.A. Walk, and I will be there as well broadcasting for Relevant Radio. So please come to that if you're in Southern California in the L.A. region, or go to San Diego where Timory is. Come say hi. You'll be emceeing in San Diego.
Yes, I'm emceeing in San Diego, yeah. And I will have some books available there too for anyone in the area, Real Feminism, that I usually only have in person with me. So if you're interested.
Yeah, and the second thing with that, before I forget, this movie is called Unprotected, and it's all about the sexual revolution and the role that contraception has played. And it's coming out probably in July. But here's the thing I wanted to make you aware of. I'm booking speaking engagements for around that time and following. That's the 50th anniversary of Humanae Vitae. It's going to be, I think, a pretty big deal. I was talking to some folks this week, some big conferences happening. And so if you would like me to bring that movie to your parish, here's the offer we're making. We bring the movie, we show the movie, I can give you a talk or a Q&A session, whatever you want. We package it according to your parish. Now's the time to book that.
You know, I was thinking about your video here, and you said unprotected. Like, the fact that you even named it unprotected, the idea of unprotected sex today is shocking to millennials. Like, I worked in the crisis pregnancy centers, and they think sex is protected sex. They think procreative sex is not a thing. They just think that...
That's a very good point, yes.
You know, I remember conversations in the crisis pregnancy center, and the girl's pregnancy test comes back as positive. And her response is, well, that can't be. That's not possible. You have this question of, well, do you know where babies come from?
You know, those are the people we should be asking. You know how this works, right?
But to them, that's dumb sex.
I think you were actually closer when you said it's not even a thing. It doesn't
even
they
can't.
It's something they couldn't even wrap their minds around. Right. And actually, this is something we explore a little bit in the film. Even for married people, to throw this out there, Timmy, in our culture today, even for married people, the thought of uncontracepted sex is just mind blowing. Like, what?
That's heartbreaking.
What would that even mean? I can't even like... And so this is a good point, too, when people say, oh, what's the difference between, for instance, natural family planning, mm-hmm. where you're not planning to have a child, but you're not using contraception? What's the difference between that? Because the end result is still not a child and contraception. Well, just ask yourself the question. Okay, if you, let's say, don't want a kid and you're willing to have, and you want to have sex, do it during an unfertile time, but don't use contraception. And they'll be like, oh no, I could never do that. Why would I? And okay, well, there you go. There's the difference. There's an obvious difference. If you think it's the same thing, try NFP. Right. It actually works better than contraception if you want to not have a kid.
And it's just being aware, fertility awareness. There are tons of fertility awareness programs that copy natural family planning. They're being called revolutionary because natural family planning was. It recognizes with, sorry, TMI, mucuses, basal temperature, and yes, looking at, you know, the time if you have a regular cycle to be aware of that. But here's the deal. It's still being open to life, because if you get pregnant still, which is very rare when you actually are using natural family planning to space out children or for legitimate health reasons, not have a child at the time, you're still open to life. You're not going to abort your child. However, the attitude can enter in where we are using natural family planning as a contraceptive with a mindset where you are, you know, just using the other as a means to your pleasure in some sense. But it's not easy to abstain from sex, especially when you're married. And I think that that's something that a lot of people, you know, get all in uproar. You can use NFP as a contraceptive with the wrong mindset, but it's much more difficult too.
That's right. It's much more difficult. In fact, speaking of Damon Owens, I was talking to him about this, and he, of course, is a very big advocate and teacher of natural family planning. Right. They have, Damon and Melanie have, I think, 8 kids. Just a lovely family. But he was saying, actually, it's interesting, there's a development, if you will, among Catholic families that have used NFP for many years, but now they have reached the point where they've had enough kids, where the man is like getting a vasectomy, or the now they are getting sterilized after they've used NFP all of these years.
Yeah.
And to me, I think that's an indication of just what you're saying. Like, okay, you're using it, and it, but you don't have the right
mindset
there. Right. That's not, still not quite the right heart. It's not like a magic potion. You know, we read the readings for today. The mass readings for today are about
Samuel.
Keeping the Sabbath. And Jesus shares the story of, well, don't you remember when David and his men ate the food from the temple, which was forbidden?
Right.
And Jesus is making the point, listen, the law was made for you. Okay, you were not made for the law. So don't treat, for instance, I would apply that to NFP, don't treat NFP as if it's just, all right, I checked it, I did my duty, I used NFP, I didn't use contraception, now God's going to welcome me into heaven and be all happy. No, you still have to have the right heart condition, right? In the same way that we just don't treat laws that way. So you don't treat the Catholic rule against contraception as if it's just something to check off. That's a good point.
Absolutely. Well, and that's the thing too. David and his men, they were at war, and the law was that they would not be having any sexual relations during that time. They were acting, in a sense, in a priestly capacity, which is what allowed them to eat that bread. So it's even more relevant to what we're talking about than we realize. Well, it's been a great show. I want to put a plug in for Radiant and Valiant magazines, radiant.osv.com. You can find the magazine that is truly a sponsor to this show, a huge supporter. They are Catholic magazines for young men and young women, dealing with topics of life, modesty, marriage, relationships, personalities, and getting to know your own personality. Check out Radiant and Valiant magazines by Our Sunday Visitor.
From the studios of Relevant Radio,
this has been Trending with Dawn and Timory.
Trending.
To learn more about Dawn Johnson or Timory Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit dawnjohnsonministries.org or timory.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.